You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's been run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. This week, the search engine juggernaut Google announced the move into the operating system market with a version of Chrome destined to be a free operating system on netbooks. It's been a few years since the introduction of Google's Android platform for mobile devices, and now they're moving into the portable devices. Google announced last Tuesday that it's developing a new operating system for personal computers, just a month after Microsoft launched Bing, its first search engine to gain ground on Google after more than a decade of misses. The Chrome operating system will initially be available on low-cost netbooks, designed for internet surfing and running web-based software, starting in the second half of 2010. Google said it will not charge for the software, which could pressure Microsoft to cut prices on its Windows, eroding more earnings from the profitable system found on 9 out of every 10 PCs. This new assault on the operating system market does raise several questions, one of which is what is Google's long-term aspirations for Chrome? In a market where there are currently three players, is there room for a fourth? Microsoft has its Windows, Apple has its OS X, and there is, of course, Linux. Soon Chrome will make its debut. For years now, many organisations have tried to muscle in on what Google does best, and most of them have not even managed to scratch, let alone dint, the juggernaut's armour. Microsoft are up to their fourth incarnation of their search engine and have really missed the internet boat. And now they find another threat from Google as they're targeting something very near and dear to Microsoft's heart, PC operating systems. It was reported in the Sydney Morning Herald that the new operating system is based on a product from Google that has had limited success, the Chrome browser. As of February, it claimed 1.2% market share compared to nearly 70% for Microsoft's browser. Google said Chrome OS will be fast and lightweight, letting users access the web in just a few seconds after turning on their PCs, but did not provide much information about the product, making it hard for analysts to judge long-term prospects. So, is this the beginning of the end for Microsoft? No way. If anything, it will make them even more determined to release high-quality product into the marketplace. Consumers will win with more competition, and as for Apple, it'll be no doubt business as usual. What it does mean for Microsoft, though, is that complacency could be very costly.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Dodo's broadband network performance and customer service woes have plummeted to new lows. Aussie firm sells Twitter followers. Lack of enterprise appeal takes the shine off Chrome OS. Triple X domain names raise the Australian government's hackles again. Cyber attacks put the spotlight on web vulnerabilities. And will falling sales see the death of the PC gamer? First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Google announces its Chrome operating system. The Basslink fiber goes live. Apple's iPhone 3GS is already jailbroken. Cyber attacks jam websites in the US and South Korea. And Britain's top spy is no longer top secret. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Internet search juggernaut Google has announced the release of an operating system for netbooks and desktop computers. Conceived as an extension of the Google Chrome web browser, which was introduced in September last year, the new Chrome OS is described as an open-source, fast, lightweight operating system that will initially be targeted at netbooks. Google says that Chrome OS will be available for consumers in the second half of 2010, and that negotiations with OEM partners have already commenced. For application developers, Google says that the web is the platform, and that all web-based applications will automatically work, and that new applications can be written using existing web technologies. Google said that the Chrome OS is not intended to replace Android. Android is an operating system designed to work on mobile telephones, PDAs, and small screen devices. In a press release last week, Google acknowledged that there would be areas where Google Chrome OS and Android overlap. The new Basslink fibre optic cable between Tasmania and the Australian mainland was commissioned last week as customer data began flowing for the first time. The cable, which is owned by Basslink Telecoms, provides a long-awaited infrastructure alternative to the Telstra network. While test traffic has been flowing for some months, ISPs Aurora and Internode have now begun using the cable to carry customer data. In a press release last week, Basslink CEO Mr. Malcolm Eccles said that Basslink was pleased to deliver this vital new facility to serve the Tasmanian community and economy, and also noted that Basslink had made a major investment to enable the Basslink interconnector to carry high bandwidth telecommunications traffic. The Premier of Tasmania, Mr. David Bartlett, welcomed the news, describing Basslink as an important precursor to the rollout of the national broadband network in Tasmania. The first man to unlock the original Apple iPhone in 2007 has released a utility which jailbreaks the new iPhone 3GS. All users need is the latest iTunes installed on a Windows-based PC and an iPhone 3GS with 3.0 firmware. By connecting the iPhone normally and running the utility, users can now jailbreak their new iPhone, which allows the installation and use of software that hasn't been approved for Apple's App Store. Mr. George Hotz, creator of the so-called Purple Rain utility, criticised Apple's iPhone dev team for not unlocking the latest iPhone firmware on 3GS. Mr. Hotz has cautioned iPhone owners that Purple Rain is still in beta and suggests backing up data before running the utility. Technology reviewer John Biggs on popular tech blog CrunchGear.com published a two-minute how-to video and described the jailbreaking process with Purple Rain as amazingly simple. The so-called Purple Rain utility can be downloaded from Purple Rain, that's purplera1n.com. A distributed denial-of-service attack aimed at 27 American and South Korean government agencies and commercial websites has temporarily shut down more than a third of them in the last week. Officials and computer experts in the United States said on Wednesday that the attacks were unsophisticated and on a relatively small scale, but that their origins had not yet been determined. Early indications are that the network of infected computers, or botnet, numbered somewhere from 50,000 to 65,000 computers, and that infected computers had been instructed to flood specific websites with access requests. Affected websites included the United States Treasury Department, the Secret Service, the Federal Trade Commission, the New York Stock Exchange, and the Transportation Department. In South Korea, at least 11 major sites have been affected, including the Presidential Blue House, the Defense Ministry, and the National Assembly. The source of the attack is still unknown. And the personal details of Britain's top spy, head of MI6 Sir John Sawyers, have been published in a Sunday tabloid after his wife made everything publicly available on Facebook. The information, including the couple's home address and holiday photos showing Sir Sawyers in a pair of Speedos, was publicly available to Facebook's community of 200 million users until the information was removed last week. But the replicative nature of the internet has ensured the information will live on in cyberspace long after the account has been deleted. Chairman of the British Parliament's Counter-Terrorism Subcommittee, Mr. Patrick Mercer, is unimpressed with Lady Sawyer's decision to publish much of her husband's private life on Facebook.
This is the sort of material that enemy agencies or people simply who wish such a high-profile individual, or an individual who shouldn't be high-profile, let's face it, in that sort of job, it's exactly the sort of the stuff they need to make his job much more difficult than it needs to be.
But many have defended the Sawyer's decision to publish the information, including the Foreign Minister David Miliband and former Prime Minister Sir John Major, saying that there are much bigger things to be worrying about than the head of MI6's Speedos. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Before we get to the rundown this week,
Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah, you know.
The infamous Dr. Ron voicemail defense system.
It'll be interesting with one of these cashback deals to actually demand cash.
Why do you want cash, Graham? You've got a tax problem.
And it'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly and even the Microsoft YouTube channel.
Not only to access information and media on your home network, but also to access the internet and access online services as well.
DLNA, Digital Living Network Alliance.
The DLNA server can also be a network-attached storage device.
Ah, well, you will work for the government.
Yeah. Everybody else is paying for the bandwidth to distribute the commercial.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy. What are you?
I'm on 8 meg. 16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Very interesting evening this evening. Full panel in. I'm Andrew McComb, and in the room, in the studio here at 3WBC tonight, from right to left, if you're watching us on Ustream, does it go right to left, boys, or is it left to right? Which way should I go?
As you see us. JD's on the left.
Okay, JD's on the left. Okay. JD on the left, Dr. Ron in the middle, Adam Turner on the right, and Lydia Davis all the way, fresh from Palo Alto in the United States, joining us live in the studio.
This is exciting.
It's a first, isn't it? 4 years it's taking to come back to Australia. Now, that is a microphone, Lydia. You need to talk into it is really how this radio thing.
Oh, really? Explain how it works, please.
Okay, good. You know, she does this thing called the Drill Down in the United States, which is a podcasty, simulcasty. What sort of casty thing is it, Lydia?
It's a podcasty, simulcasty type of thing, and what like
is
you
it,
said.
And what is it? What's it all about? Tell me all
they
about
just
it.
They talk about all things tech and they tech do. Related.
And who's in it? Who's in it?
Andy Sorsini, Mr. Babyman from Dig. And Reg Sadler, who was on Dig once upon a time. They were the power users on Dig, or were. Reg was. Zaibatsu, and Muhammad Saleem, and myself. And we waffle about.
Every Friday night, which I think is Saturday morning Australian time, Saturday lunchtime, I think, yeah. I've tuned in.
I'm often doing TikTok stuff on Saturday, and I see the tweets go out saying, we're live now, yeah. Friday night.
Yeah, well, I normally listen to it while I'm mowing the lawn on a Saturday afternoon, is when we listen to it here in Australia. But anyway, that's good. And you've travelled all the way over here from the wonders of California to good old sunny Australia. You brought the rain with us, actually.
I've brought the bug with me.
Yes, you have.
Oh, mate. I'm not feeling
well.
Which is
good. And you've brought your children, so they're listening to us now, live as we
go. Hi, Jonah. Hi, Jamie. Hi, yeah. Emily. Hi, Georgie.
Yeah, Georgie and Emily. They're sitting there having a great old time playing around with their friends that they haven't seen for 4 years. That's what happens when they come over here. So, anyway, we'll talk more about that. How's everybody else's week been? Don't all speak at once.
Survived the school holidays.
Yeah, well, they're all back now, aren't they? Well, yes, sort of some of them are. Almost, the traffic wasn't too bad this morning on the road.
I get my house back to myself.
Do you? So you can actually think and write and not have to worry about, you know, just sitting down to the laptop and then going and getting a drink for someone or...
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it's good like that, isn't it? Hey, welcome. Yeah, anyway. So, all right, we probably should start off with Google. Why not tonight, Google? The Gmail client. We spoke about this about 2 weeks ago on the radio show, and now it's finally out of beta.
Hooray!
Gmail out of beta. 10 years. How long has Google been around for?
Yeah.
About that long.
Yeah, but
about
Gmail hasn't been around for...
No, but it seems like it has because we've been using it for years and years and years and years. Yeah, we have been using it.
It was an April Fool's joke. It was looked like it was an April Fool's joke. Was it 2001, I think, or 2002
they announced it?
They
announced
and they said like a gig of storage and everyone thought, yeah right. Because at that time you could get like 20 meg or something on a Hotmail account. And then later in the day people went, they're not joking.
Good way to this lull your opposition into a false sense of security.
Yeah. What are they up to now? Seven?
No, it's seven or eight.
It's seven or eight. Keeps going up, doesn't it? Good on you. Finally, why do you reckon they turned it into a real application? When I say real, a production application now rather than a beta.
They were obviously listening to our show.
Yeah, that'll be it.
That'll do it. I'll do it every time.
Has anything actually changed? Did they say now it has a new feature?
Was there a version upgrade or something?
The word beta's gone out of the logo. That's good.
That's probably all they did. They just swapped the graphic over.
They advertised that it was Google Docs that was taken out of beta and put into production, but it's Gmail as well.
For them. It should still be in beta.
Don't you like Google Docs? Have you used it much?
I use it every day. I do all my work in it, and lately the spell checker is screwed. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say that.
Why okay. Has it gone American on you, has it?
No, put it's gone nothing of at all. It picks random words and said that's not spelled right. You've been good until lately. I think they put the moz on it. By taking the beta off it, they broke it. So I thought they'd leave beta on it forever because I thought that was just their get-out-of-jail-free card, right?
Really
something
was.
Went wrong and they just, oh, it's a beta.
Yeah, well... Yeah. Apple do that as well. Lid, that's a microphone. You've got to talk into it for people to hear. You don't... Yes.
Warlock in our chat says that there's a little setting in the option tools options settings that you just tick a checkbox and it turns the beta logo back on if you want.
Cool.
So that's handy
that's
to know.
True.
That's all reassuring.
That's great, Warlock. Set, yeah. Thank you very much.
So, all right, that's beta, or should I say Google's Gmail now, officially. I wonder what next?
Mm.
What next? The cloud?
Latitude might come to the iPhone eventually.
Well, Latitude might come to a lot of things eventually. How's your HTC device running with Latitude, Dr. Ronno?
It's going well.
Does Latitude drain the batteries just as much as the Bluetooth and the other device? Because Dr. Ronno's battery life. And Lydia's got one of these phones too.
Have you got an HTC Dreamlit or a T-Mobile G1,
you would
call it, which is one of those sorts of things?
I have exactly that.
How do you go with the battery, with the performance?
I do nothing with it, just take phone calls, turn everything off, we're good for, a day.
A day?
Yeah.
A day.
It's about my experience as well. I did get something very exciting happening during the week, though, Andrew, and that was tethering. And this has been the subject of much discussion recently, and I'm glad that Adam's in tonight because he can talk a little bit about it as well. What tethering is if you're going to use your mobile device as a modem, essentially, instead of buying a dongly thing or an Express or PCMCIA card or USB stick or whatever. So what you do is load a small application on this, which is not available in the Australian Android market.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Android.
Well, Google have deliberately not put it there. I think they're under a lot of pressure from the mobile carriers not to provide tethering applications. Absolutely. And Adam, you've explained this on your blog and in a recent article that you posted as well. It's not a market as such, Andrew, but someone has written it. Someone's written a proxy server application. They've made it available so you can navigate to that page. You can install the application. You install a similar application on your laptop or your netbook, and then you can start browsing. You connect the USB cable, connect it up, and you just start browsing the web or doing whatever you want to do through the network connection on here. You can either use the Wi-Fi connection on this or it can use the 3G mobile phone network.
That's what I want on the iPhone. I want to be able to turn it into a Wi-Fi hotspot and then use any device and connect it to the iPhone.
Well, you can do that, but you need to jailbreak
your phone.
Yeah,
but you need to jailbreak it.
Because I had that working up in Queensland a couple of weeks ago.
Because what I'd love to be able to do is get one of these SD cards that goes into a digital camera, a Wi-Fi equipped one, so you can then email photos straight off the camera. And then I put my iPhone in my pocket and turn it into a Wi-Fi hotspot going up to the mobile broadband. So I could take a photo with my camera. It would go via Wi-Fi to my phone up to the mobile broadband and then straight into Facebook. So if you're at a wedding or something like that, you can be taking decent photos rather than little iPhone photos and still be putting copies straight up into Facebook.
Well, if you do want to do that, jailbreak your phone. PDA Net is the application you need.
Yep.
And basically you set up a ad hoc network on your MacBook or whatever you're using to connect to the iPhone, and then you've got an ad hoc network for whatever you've got around you.
Yeah, that would almost tempt me to jailbreak my phone.
Mm.
What about the theme, the Tech Talk Radio theme? Would that, now we're not hopefully not letting the cat out of the bag.
Will that
make you push?
Yeah? That could push me over the edge.
Oh, there you go. The engineering department at Tech Talk Radio has been building a theme for your iPhone, so watch this server space somewhere
Have a quick look at the forum.techtalkradio.com.au and you'll find it there.
If you're wanting to have a look at how I've set up the tethering on the HTC Dream or the T-Mobile G1, as the Americans call it, or even on one of the new Magics and HTC Magic, I've got a blog post there at dron.com.au, and it explains how to do it and links to the applications to download and install.
Now, the iPhone tethering is much more elegant if your ISP will let you use it. You basically just go into the menus and find the thing that says tethering and you switch it on.
But how can the ISP prohibit you from using it?
Because Apple have set up the phone in such a way that the ISP can easily control the build of the software on your phone and switch it on and off.
But Google is your friend.
Google is your friend, but it's Apple's fault for building the phone in such a way to let the telcos do that. Like if you've got a
Windows mobile phone. Things for telcos.
If you've got a Windows mobile phone, you can do it without a problem. You can do all kinds of things. You can make Skype calls over mobile broadband on a Windows mobile phone. Can't do it on an iPhone.
Unless
you jailbreak it. Apple have designed the phone to make it a lot easier for third parties to interfere and tell you what you can and can't do.
It's interesting. The reason why I was just chuckling amongst myself, I've got a network card for my mobile broadband, and I have a little box by D-Link, and I just slot my network, what I would normally put into my laptop, says he, pointing at my laptop. But I've just got a little D-Link card, and I just slot it into the router, and it just does exactly that, which is very handy. And means you can, when you're a long way from home, you can stick it up on top of something and get good signal, and then have lovely, good mobile broadband Wi-Fi.
I've got a D-Link router like that. I can stick my Vodafone USB stick in the back when we go on holidays, stick it on top of the fridge or whatever, and then everyone in the house has internet.
Absolutely,
access.
And it's the way to go. Mm. But anyway, if you want to do that from your handset, yeah, go and spend the $200 and get yourself one of those routery cardy things. They're good. Hey, in fact, I think Three have a little
Three
device,
have like that,
don't they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of Three and iPhones, because we've meandered onto that subject, says he trying to find the piece of paper. Three released their iPhone prices today at long last, because the 3GS is, or the 3G, anything Apple 3G, is going to be released on the 17th, which isn't too far away. Now, the pricing was quite interesting, I thought. Quite affordable compared to other networks.
Like minimum of 24-month contract, though.
Well, yes. You're
going to get that in most places, though.
Yeah, what do you get on Telstra? What do you get on Optus? It'd be all the same, wouldn't it?
I bought mine outright, so I didn't have to do any of that. So.
Yeah, well, you can buy them outright. That's the other thing, too. And who was telling me about that the other? It might have been you, JD. You go to the local, the Apple store online here, and you can choose
this
version
A unlocked,
or version B, and it comes network unlocked, but not jailbroken thing.
Apple, so you definitely wouldn't jailbreak.
No. So you go there and you buy your phone. It comes in the mail, I assume. You put your SIM in of choice and download your access, your APN details into the phone, and away you go. And it's as simple as that, isn't it?
Yep.
And you can pay anywhere from $870 at a guess through, I think, for the 8 gig version, the small one?
The small one. It was high sevens from memory. We'd need to quickly look.
We'll jump onto the net and have a look. And then I think the big one, the 32 gig one, was about $1,000 or something like that, yeah. Anyway, if you want to do that, buy it outright, by all means. Makes it very easy to use, I suppose. Well, you know, from a network point of view. $49 cap will get you $350 worth of calls, which and around 250 meg of data, which is on the 3G, not the 3GS, the 3G iPhone. Mm. But if you want to spend an extra $14 a month, this is the catch. For an extra $14 a month on your 24-month contract, you can up the data level to 500 meg, and it takes the actual cap to $57 a month for a 3GS, and that's the 16-gig version.
$14 a month for extra. An extra 500 meg.
Yeah.
What a rip-off. Who's this with? Three.
This is Three.
Oh, good on them.
Lid, pretty stingy for Three.
It is. It's very stingy for Three. Lid, now that you're here in the studio and you're under the... We can put you under the pump now.
Oh, don't do that tonight.
How do our pricing plans and our data plans compare with what happens in the States? Does it surprise you that we're paying 500... No, what was it? I've just got out of my head the figures.
$57.
$57 for extra...
For a 3GS for 500 meg.
Yeah.
Like, over a 24-month contract.
Does that surprise you? Is it stingy or is that about part of the course as far as...
Because in the States, I mean, the phone systems are very different to how... Sorry. It's very different to how it's set up here. And I remember when we were here, I was saying to Andrew earlier tonight, you know, I was SMSing and quite happy doing everything over there. Now I suddenly have the option to do that, but suddenly it becomes too hard and it's really expensive. And there's all these costs associated with phone calls that we don't have here.
You pay to receive calls in the States?
We pay to receive calls and to make calls.
Do you pay to receive text messages?
I don't know if you... I can't tell you.
See, that reminds me of the old analog network out here.
But it's bizarre because, you know, you're getting a double whammy while they're getting the double whammy. Mm. And I just think it's ludicrous. So I avoid that. I use my phone for having a quick look on Tech Meme and ringing people. That's it. I don't do very much with it. I was doing a lot more 3 years ago here with my mobile than I do with it over there, which is surprising.
Is that just from a cost minimisation point of view? You just don't want to rack up huge bills?
Also, the signals are really horrible.
Yeah, well, Phil Burgess, when he was with Telstra, basically said just that. You know, you just had to move over in the United States and your call would drop out.
We're in Palo Alto, like, you know, the heart of Silicon Valley, and to get a decent signal, that's just a joke. So you walk around the house and suddenly you've lost the person you're speaking to, so you have to just sort of stop. And like, you have to stop. This is Silicon Valley.
It's supposed to be the world's hub of technology.
It absolutely blows my mind.
So how many competing phone networks do you have there, like in Silicon Valley?
There's what? Half a dozen?
Like, we would have four here, and then they would have resellers.
Yeah,
resellers. So we've got Verizon, who we're with, AT&T. Who else? T-Mobile. The G1s.
T-Mobile sell them exclusively?
You can only get through T-Mobile.
Yep.
AT&T offer the iPhone. And then you've got, you know, Verizon that offer just normal plans, which we were on until I wanted that. But they're the main three. I can't think of anyone else.
So there's a lot more of that, if you want this phone, you need to be with this network kind of thing.
It's a pain in the neck, yeah. I think, you know, I'd like to see it open up, but I don't know whether that will happen.
So the only option is to buy it outright then?
It is, it really is. And even then, like when I was coming here, I said to them, I want to use this phone in Australia. The only way I could do this was to, you have to be with them for 3 months before they'll give you an unlock code to put a new chip in.
And that's standard here, though. Except you can pay extra to get it here, I think, and
you
get straight up.
You can't pay extra, because I tried that. you know, I tried everything. You know, we need two phones because we need to give our kids one, no go. And it was essentially, you have to be with us, you have to be on a plan, and then we'll give you the code to use it.
Interesting the way different phone companies work like that, isn't it? So I know
it's
here
like they grab you and just suck you in and don't let go.
But that's what telcos are all about. They want to own you as a customer.
Yeah.
Customer retention, customer ownership.
Yeah.
So, but I know three here in Australia do. As soon as you sign up with them, they will unlock a handset for you. Well, that's what I've experienced personally, whether that's their official policy, I don't know. Telstra, if you buy a phone, you can pay. Well, the three-month thing applies. If you're with them for 3 months, then they'll unlock it for you for nothing, but you can pay a bonus cap fee or something and they'll unlock it.
But you'll get a different answer depending on what day you ring and who you ask and which way the wind's blowing.
Well, that's Telstra for you.
Telstra will never give you the same answer twice on anything.
But see, with the iPhone, AT&T provide the service, and there's a whole lot of kerfuffle happening over there now with the 3GS because it's brought in all these services that it can provide that AT&T doesn't support.
So, on their network, yeah.
Yeah, so what's happened is everyone's up in arms, and Apple are very quiet, as you know, they won't comment on anything, but, you know, we're wondering whether other providers will start handing out iPhones. If that happens, I'd like to see Google do this, the Android get around the G1 and 2 and 3, get around different providers so that at least you get that competition. So hopefully you can say, it just feels like they suck into, you know, they just keep you there and you're locked in and you have no choice. And that's the thing that is so unfair. Competition is good.
So in this country, we can drive from, say, one capital city to another capital city, whether it's up a main highway or what, but you'll maintain coverage regardless of really which carrier you're on. You'll be able to make a call.
No.
That's not the case?
No way. No
So you
way.
Can't... What happens if you drive from, say, Los Angeles to San Francisco through Bakersfield and straight up the middle there? Do you get coverage all the way?
Well, you get coverage when there's coverage, and when there's not, you don't. And that's how it is.
But how can there not be... You don't have an expectation that you'd have coverage on a major highway.
I do have that expectation.
We would. If we're driving up the Hume from Melbourne to Sydney, we'd expect to have coverage 100% of the time.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. You know, not long ago, we went on a field trip with Jonah, and, AT&T didn't offer... You couldn't use an iPhone there. I couldn't use my phone, so... No, it's not everywhere and really kind of sucky considering where we are.
It is sucky. It's annoying.
So what you're saying is Australia's sitting pretty good when it comes to mobile.
Australia's amazingly good.
Really?
With telecommunications, I think so. They've got it all over. You've got everything here.
What about speed in the US on a data plan? Like, do you get... Like, can 3G. You do... on the 3G stuff, do you actually get half-decent sort of connectivity into a network, or are we sharing with lots and lots of people so it's like dial-up, or what's it like?
Ask me. She's about shaking your head. I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I don't.
You don't use any of those data apps, obviously.
No, I don't know.
So what else is different? Obviously, we've spoken briefly about communications. What about things like, you know, home internet? How fast are you? Like, do you get really blindingly fast between your PC and the network provider, and it grinds to a halt, sort of like what happens here when you're trying to connect outside of Australia? What's the home internet like?
Good. I was, I think I was talking to you when I was having problems with the drill down. And it was cutting out on me, and it was just basically it wasn't the modem, it was the...
the wireless network.
Well, it was the router, actually, wasn't it? We changed all this stuff, and it worked fine, but it's fast. It gives us everything we want. It blows me away, actually, because we came here, and I stayed with my mum and dad, and I had to plug the thing into my computer and then sit there and go, you know, waiting for the page to load. So I'd forgotten how slow it is.
Mm.
But that might be just the country. I don't know whether it's like that here.
Do you find that there are different grades of telcos here? Like, if you want a good service, you might go with an internet or an Internode or an IINet. In the US. Whereas if you go with someone like a Dodo,
oh, yeah,
then you are just getting maybe dial up in a bit.
Yeah.
So it's over there.
Absolutely.
You get what you pay for?
Well, you get what you pay for, but there's also the other problem. We use Comcast, which is a group that provides. Do you guys want to come and hold it for me? Because obviously I don't know how to use this thing.
Microphone, yeah, it's good.
Sorry. But we use Comcast, and until then we were trying different things. But again, there's no competition for Comcast in the Bay Area. So you have to use Comcast, and they can do what they like, and they can charge you what they like.
And they probably do.
And they do. And, you know...
Is this DSL?
DSL. It's what we have, digital subscribers. Over the phone line.
Is this over your phone line, or is it cable?
Cable.
Ah, because I was going to say, for DSL, do they let resellers share DSLs and stuff like that?
I don't know.
Okay.
You're getting a bit far away from...
You get all your services over cable predominantly in the US, don't you?
Yeah.
So there's...
It'd be like an Optus cable or a Big Pond, maybe.
Yeah, the HFC cable. Sort of thing.
Oh, look, that's all you have. So, you know, you take what you have and you're used to that, and it's fast for me and it's great for me, and I can load everything really quickly and watch video, and but you have your set limits.
Well, it's an interesting country, I guess. It's been there for a while. I know they've got their own internal internet dilemmas at the moment, we keep seeing in the press from time to time over there. So, but you mentioned Dodo before earlier, Adam, which is quite interesting because they're doing exceptionally well at the moment. There was some stuff in the mainstream press just today about the fact that their users are complaining severely about their speed of their broadband, especially over the past 2 weeks. Scores of Dodo customers have reported serious sustained connection issues, but in a phone interview, Dodo's managing director, Larry Kesselman, denied that there was an issue.
Of course he did.
Yes. So,
but there, I got not to get anybody sued here. Of course he did.
I thought there was they were a reseller of Telstra, Dodo. Were they not?
Oh, maybe, but I think there are other things you can do, and there might be people in the room who know more about it than me, but there are other things you can do, like the number of customers you try to cram within a certain amount of space or a certain amount of data. I think it's called contention or something like that.
It's very contentious.
Yeah, no, but it's basically how many people... It's like being on a mobile phone cell and how many people they try and cram onto the cell.
But
you get the same sort of thing. And they try to spread it too far and do too... It's the equivalent of what Optus do with their mobile broadband.
Well, that's why it's so slow, because they've got so many people trying to get a slice
of
the pie.
Their sales department is writing checks that their network can't cash.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dodo has the same problem. You get what you pay for, people. Look at the complaints about Dodo to the Competition Commission as a percentage of total customers, and theirs is way above anybody else's.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the TIO can...
They don't have a Dodo hotline.
Yeah,
they probably do.
Press three for Dodo.
Absolutely.
It would not surprise me that the percentage of unhappy customers they have is higher than any other ISP in the country.
I wonder if... I think last time just going from memory here, that the actual complaints on telecommunications was on the wane, but some obviously providers were rising. But majority of complaints, I think, were towards mobile issues, I think, not so much internet issues.
Complaints, the do not call register sort of complaints are falling.
Oh, they've,
I saw that
they've
the
plummeted,
other day.
Haven't they? Yeah.
Because they've brought this stuff in. As for actual the quality of your services, I haven't seen anything saying that was falling.
Yeah.
Maybe people's expectations are falling.
Maybe. I must admit, here's a bouquet for Telstra. My parents lost their phone line during the course of the rain. It rained here in Melbourne just the other day for about 5 minutes. And during that 5 minutes, it created absolute havoc in the telecommunications section in Blackburn,
where they live. All the supermarket bags they'd wrapped around the copper leaked.
Absolutely. Anyway, the funny thing was they couldn't make phone calls incoming or outgoing, no dial time, but yet their ADSL still works. So obviously it gives you a bit of a feel for where the fault was lying.
So worry if the ADSL works, but your voice circuit doesn't work.
Exactly.
That's got disaster written all over it.
So the copper's not actually
in the house. Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't been severed.
No. They knew where the fault was. They said, yes, we acknowledge it was hot. But anyway...
What was the fault? Did they have no dial tone or...
Yeah, you picked the phone up and it was dead, basically. You couldn't hear anything. And if you tried to ring the number, it would ring, but you couldn't hear it ring at the other end. It was nothing.
Yeah.
But yet their DSL was fully functional on the same pair.
On your end, so...
Yeah. So anyway...
Have you unplugged all the fax machines? Yeah, go on.
Anyway, so credit to Telstra. They rang fault and they said, yes, we know where the fault is. We know exactly where the fault is and we'll have it fixed by Monday. A guy came and knocked on their door on Saturday morning and said, is your phone working now? And they'd fixed it there and then. So the fault was not on the premises. They even did it on a Saturday. So good on you, Telstra. Well done for that one. So there you go. Bit of telco Goodwill. They
did
well.
That's unlike you.
What do you mean? That's very
really
unlike.
Well done, Telstra.
No. Well, they do things
you've
well.
You've got to give them credit when they do something right, because it happens so rarely.
There we go.
We want to encourage them too, Lid. We don't want to discourage them.
Positive.
To,
yeah, okay.
It's a positive reinforcement. It's like a small child,
yeah, I'm just thinking.
Positive reinforcement. Yeah. Well done. That's really good. Keep doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Too right.
If only you could do it 2 days in a row.
2 days. Now, while we're on the humoristic side of things, in the UK on the 10th of July, a couple of days ago, they had the Internet Awards from an industry point of view, which was really quite funny. I know Adam wrote about it today in the paper.
Who won?
But, well, there's lots, actually, if I can find the right piece of paper now that you've asked me that. Here we go. There were several categories. The best consumer fixed broadband ISP was O2. If you're familiar with
O2, very, very big in the UK.
And I don't know, we normally have someone in the UK listening here. I'm
so
just having a scroll down
UK
the list.
UK only award program?
Yes, UK only award. They've got categories like the best consumer ISP, best business customer, best dial up networks, apparently EXA, whoever EXA are in the UK, they've got that one. The best internet telephony, best streaming, you know, all these great inter industry accolades that they sort of, you know, hand out gongs and all that sort of stuff. And anyway, they do have a category called the Internet Villain of the Year. And anyway, as you would sort of expect, the Internet Villain of the Year went to the Australian Minister for Communications, the Right Honourable Mr Conroy.
Congratulations.
A round of applause,
All the way over there.
Very good.
So there you go, Mr Conroy. You've made it further than the Indian Pacifics and Tasman Oceans. He's gone a bit further afield. So
I think I even saw a pic of him today on the Sydney Morning Herald holding his award standing
he's
in front of the fire.
So you mean this one? If you're looking on the webcam, you can might be able to see it there. Which
Internet Villain of the Year. There he is. He looks quite proud, actually.
He does.
Photoshop is a wonderful thing.
It is amazing what you can do. Dear. Anyway.
I'll tell you, though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky. If, for example, you used Photoshop and decided to take Superman's chest with him ripping open his shirt and Photoshopping it onto an iPhone to show off how good the iPhone is by saying, you know, the S and it's Superman, you will get a call from Marvel's lawyers and you will end up changing that photo very quickly.
Really?
Any experience
here?
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, we should try it.
Reminds me of a television
it's,
network I've done.
It's
work
been with. Tried.
Oh.
Yeah, very good. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, Adam's got a story to tell us off air, so we're going to go to a break.
Okay, we might go to a break and catch up with that. If you've got questions for Lid or anything like that, come along on our chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, or anyone else here on the panel, naturally enough. We can take a break. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Talk Radio.
Did you know that whenever Tech Talk Radio is live to air, you can chat with the panel in real time? It's marvellous, this internet thingy. So wherever you are, anywhere in the world, you can be a part of Australia's premier technology show. You don't even have to register. Just log on to chat.techtalkradio.com.au and add your voice to the growing number of interactive Tech Talk listeners. It's a great way to ask a question to a guest or to the panel. Come on, join the fun. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio. Welcome back to Full Contingency on the panel. Graham is, if you're wondering where Graham's gone tonight, he's in Tasmania. He's on vacation. He went down there to follow Hawthorn Football Club. And I don't know whether he was happy or sad.
No, he was happy.
Did they? Did they get up to
the
Hawks?
Got up about 3 points or something, I think.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Not enough.
No. I went to York Park to see Footscray play St Kilda once.
Yeah.
And the plane was running late, so we didn't get there till quarter time. Footscray didn't kick a goal for the next two quarters, and we got slaughtered.
So it's indelibly etched into your...
Yeah, and I went with a friend who's a St Kilda supporter. She felt bad at the end. It was like, just go.
Anyway, well, welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron is in this evening. JD, Adam Turner is in, and all the way from the United States.
Adam Turner's MacBook says hello as well.
My sync services database is corrupt.
Now he's broken it. And Lydia's here, all the way from Palo Alto in the United States.
Say hi, Lydia.
Hi, Lid.
There we go.
Yeah, good. There she is. Now, let's talk a little bit about Google, because Google's just up the road. Because that's what, whenever I ring Lid, she says, oh, yeah, Google, they're just up the road from you here in Mountain View, and you're in Palo Alto, just a few minutes up the road. How far is it, literally, from your front door to their front door?
I don't know in mile. I don't know in kilometres or miles.
But well, how about minutes?
It's about 7.
Well, that's pretty good. That's about from me to, you know, halfway down the road. Really?
Yeah.
Into, so, yeah, very close, in other words.
Very close.
Do you, I know you've sent pictures of the place over to me and stuff like that for web stuff, but, yeah, do you frequent the place often?
Cause,
you
know, as a matter of fact.
What do you do? Who do you speak to? Do you go and chat to all the... Have you spoken to Adam Turner lately? Adam Turner. Okay, he's over here.
I haven't spoken to Adam Turner lately. In fact,
I was saying, have you spoken to Adam Lesnick lately? The wrong surname.
No, not Adam Lesnick. Marissa Mayer, I spoke with.
Yeah, now, who's Marissa, for those who aren't familiar?
She's like the queen of Google, don't you know?
Yeah,
she's,
I do, but I'm just for those who don't know. I've got to, that's why I can ask these questions.
She's pretty much the person that sets the tone for the look and feel of Google.
And does she buy you coffee?
To go through. I don't know her title. I don't know her actual title. We can look that up really quick.
Yeah, but what does she do? She's the CEO. She's the boss cocky?
She's not the CEO. She's,
no, that's Eric, isn't it?
Yeah, she's...
What's her...
Let's have a look. Oh, come on.
Oh, look.
I think they're post-title. They don't have titles.
She's like,
big cheese.
She's VP in charge of something.
So does she buy you cool coffee things. When you go there? Do you go and sit in one of those funny rooms at Google? Have you been through Google?
Lava lamp.
I've been through Google.
Tell us about it.
What do you want to know? You walk through. They have... they do have lots of lava lamps and lots of...
Beanbags?
Beanbags.
Because when we go to Developer Day here in Sydney, that you get the beanbags to sit on and all that.
Vice President of Search, Product and User Experience. So basically the way Google looks when you go to Google's homepage, she says yay or nay to that. Every product that comes out of Google, she says yay or nay to that. So she's like...
How much power is that?
She's like Superwoman at Google.
And she bought you coffee?
No. She did a little video with me. I filmed her talking about...
I remember seeing that. I think we played a grab of it on this show.
Do we?
Yeah.
So, yeah, she... They had a conference and she was talking about what they were releasing. This was a while ago. My brain's not working, but she was the last person I saw.
What's 3 o'clock in the morning for you at the moment, isn't it?
And you've got swine flu.
And yes, you've been to Mexico?
I have.
So don't come anywhere.
When you go to Google, you can't go in the big room out the back because that's where all the Oompa Loompas are manually doing all the searches.
Oompa Loompas, you've been using too much rich
encyclopedias.
No one's supposed to know.
I took Jenna and Jamie to see the goats.
They're your kids, yeah.
But the goats had been taken away.
Google goats?
Yeah, the Google goats.
Oh.
Have you played volleyball out the front of Building 42?
I believe you. I've just never heard of it.
Yeah, they bring them in to mow the lawn because it's...
oh, no, some places here do that.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, some places here do that. You just have a goat.
The goats. And, yeah.
What about the little things they leave behind? Do you step in them or step over them?
Don't know. But we haven't played volleyball. We've been there for a barbecue. We've had dinner there.
That's good. There was an Australia Day. Didn't you go to that?
Yeah, we did. Martin went to that as well. We spoke with Lars.
Yeah.
About how he started Google Maps. And he was over there in Mountain View from Sydney, so.
Popped over for the Barbie, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
They're very social.
I could imagine. Well, that's what they're all about, communicating.
Now, that sounds awfully like the descriptions of Xerox PARC from the 60s and 70s. So is that
PARC?
Yeah.
I actually
Lydia, microphone.
I went there for a few conferences because...
She's sitting back. We're in a radio studio and she's sitting back.
We have a nice chat.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get her a throat mic or something and she can't get away from it.
Would you hold it in your hand if it works for you.
PARC holds talks, you know, and they bring various entrepreneurs in. They had... Garrett Camp, the founder of StumbleUpon, come in, and I want to listen to him and Guy Kawasaki. They had a few people come in. So occasionally they have interesting people come in, and it's a free thing to go to listen to people at PARC, and it's up the road. Everything's up the road.
Everything's up the road in Palo Alto, yeah.
So Chrome is destined for a netbook and potentially a PC, laptop-y sort of thing in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, it'll be netbook, notepad, notebook and desktop by the time they finish with it.
Yeah, second half of 2010, according to reports. What do you reckon that's going to do to the market?
Like, I don't think you'd want it on a desktop.
Well, yeah, depends
Seems
on what's
thin. Do you think?
Well, it's not designed to be it's not designed to be another operating system. It's designed to kill the operating system.
It's a quick boot thing, so that you turn on and it's on.
A life support system for a browser. So on a little netbook where everything you're doing will run in a browser, and Chrome's going to let you do a little bit more in a browser. Fine, but on a desktop where you might want to do a bit of video editing or whatever, you'll still want something like Windows.
Oh, I can totally concur
with
that.
Or you want a dual boot between them or something like that.
But I was going to say, there's some laptops around that have got a small Linux kernel and a browser in them as a quick boot, if you wish. So this would be an alternative to that,
I suppose. Would be perfect for that. And then you might find over time you spend more and more time in that and less time in Windows. But until it can run Photoshop, then, you know, there's still going to be times when you go, you know what, I think I need Windows or OS X or whatever.
Mm. Well, Windows is not too far off now. I think the industry get it this month. that'll be exciting for those who probably get the subscription thing. So, but anyway, back to Google. There's a little shindig going on in Idaho at the moment. You're waving at the desk camera.
Good. Just waving at the camera. Good. It's okay.
If you want to see us all, by the way, there's cameras everywhere in the studio. Come along to...
Good night, everybody. Go to bed.
Don't you think Google... sorry, Adam, you were saying no, not for the desktop. Don't you think this is just step one for them? Don't you see them wanting to dominate the entire...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but what they're talking about now...
Oh, yeah.
What they've announced, not even released.
It's just
if it was anyone else, you'd call it vaporware. But, you know, Google. People would have said that about Gmail or Google Docs.
I've been beta for 5 years.
Yeah. But, they may work up to something bigger than that. But the thing is, then, unless it's on Windows, like they put Linux on netbooks and people take them back and say, no, give me Windows.
Yeah, because they don't know how to use it.
No, because only Windows runs the stuff they want to use, and they don't see where they should have to learn all these new apps stuff. And go out and do all this new stuff. And Linux is not simple to use. As soon as something, you've got to configure something manually and get into the command line and do this and that, and people go, whoa, hang on a minute. Sorry. She's just gone, hey, that was a bit loud.
It's gone to the fader.
Well, hang on a minute. I just want to click an XE and have this work.
Yeah.
So I would not give a Linux machine to someone who wasn't prepared to every now and then get under the bonnet. You know?
Darren, who's normally in the UK, is currently in Melbourne, according to who he's logged on as a chat. He's called a chroming.
Yes.
For those people, law enforcement, medical people amongst us. Probably get to see a bit of that, but yes.
But you're right. It could be the first step, but... I think they will be better off where they are, and I think the biggest loser from this will be Ubuntu and the other Linux distributions.
Probably.
Yeah.
But I think the netbook is really, as you sort of suggested, if you're on the train, if you're in the car, if you're in the airport terminal, turn it on, check your mail, all done in a flash.
Yeah.
And that's really potentially where I reckon it'll kick goals. Really.
The other interesting conversation is the difference between Chrome and Android.
I was about to say, JD, I'm interested to see in where Android is going to head in this product space as well. Google said during the week specifically that the Chrome operating system is not going to compete with Android and that they're going to maintain the two separate distributions. And if you take Android like a step further to what it's being used for at the moment, I'd like to see a version of Android on netbooks because the boot time would be so fast. If all you want to do is just do some quick web browsing or check mail quickly and then log off, I think that would be devastatingly effective. It would be so quick, so easy to use, lightweight.
And I think Android would actually be more flexible on a netbook because Android is designed to run other applications.
It's not designed to Chrome be OS working in an online environment all the time.
But Chrome OS, I don't think will actually make you, just because it's making you work in a browser doesn't mean it will make you work online. Because I think it's designed in such a way that you can actually do a lot of that still on the desktop and still locally and use the local storage and stuff like that. So it will be applications running locally, but running in the browser.
Using a browser to run them.
So you won't be doing everything in the cloud. We'll say like Google Docs where everything is in the cloud. You will be doing some of it on the desktop. But you'll be able to do is pretty much run the browser. I mean, but Google won't lock it down. So you could then do whatever you want with it because it's open source. But something like Android's designed with lots of applications in mind, just designed for little devices. So Android on a netbook would probably let you give you more flexibility in what you could do than Chrome OS on a netbook. Assuming the applications were there.
What a lot of the developers are saying about Android at the moment is the only thing limiting it on netbooks is there aren't many netbooks, if any, that are touch-driven yet.
Yeah.
And Android's a touch-driven operating system.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Absolutely.
It's interesting. Eric Schmidt, who is the CEO of Google, has also got a finger in the apple pie.
Yes.
No pun intended.
Big finger in there.
Yeah.
And he's slowly starting to remove himself. He's basically said to the board of Apple saying, I don't think it's in my interests to come along to your meetings anymore.
From what I've read, he's excused himself from all the iPhone discussions because of Android.
Conflict of interest, big time.
But he doesn't see a conflict between Chrome and OS X. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because the report...
No one who uses OS X is going to ditch it to use Chrome OS. Let's be realistic. No.
Reuters were reporting that Google's Chrome OS, expected to debut in netbooks in the second half of 2010, would compete directly with Apple's OS X platform.
Mm.
So that's what Reuters are reporting. So,
no. And for exactly the reasons Adam mentioned before, people that want to drive Photoshop or movie editing that have decided that OS X is a platform for them aren't going to give it up for Chrome. So,
mm.
because you just can't do that.
But it's interesting that the next version of Windows and the next version of Apple, of both of Mac OS, are not about bigger, glitzier, fancier. It's all about stripping it down and get it to run nice and tight and streamlined. That's Windows 7 is just an optimized version of Vista. Snow Leopard is pretty much just an optimized version of Leopard.
So take out PowerPC code and
yeah. So the two big players are still moving in that direction. If people don't want more whiz and bang, they just want it to work better and faster and better on older hardware.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You can talk with us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. There's been a couple of questions in for Lit, one about cable TV. What's cable TV like over there? Can you summarise that very briefly? Is it good, bad, indifferent compared to here?
Lots of television shows, lots of really awful television shows. That's about it.
So same as here, really.
Yeah.
Does everybody have cable? Is it just one of those things that everybody has it?
Pretty much, I think. Yeah. I don't know anyone that
does. Are there
doesn't.
Many TV antennas like on the roofs of houses around San Francisco, or do they just pull it all in?
I've never looked, to be honest.
You've never noticed? Yeah.
No, because
they pull it all in through their cable rather than free-to-air.
You'd think
what's
so.
What's the point of free-to-air?
Everyone has cable. I mean, it's all one package. You get your internet,
how many
TV.
Channels have you got at home? How much does it cost?
900 odd. Doesn't no
900 or channels?
Well, no,
are
you
they
don't
900
watch all
real
of them.
Channels or
don't,
are they like no. plus two channels?
Yeah, you
like
get
2 hours behind and 2 hours ahead. Yeah, is
no,
a bit of that?
We probably have about probably I'd say 78.
Take you half an hour to do the channel surf, go around once
that we watch or that we can flick through that we don't really watch. But I remember the first time we got there and the kids, you know, they start watching something on channel two. By the time they get through flicking during the ad break, you know, that was 2 hours ago, so the show's finished.
We found that we did that in the UK as well. It's a similar sort of idea. You just sit there flicking the channels, just scrolling through to see what's on, and it takes you 3 or 4 hours to get through them all.
Yeah, it's finished.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Tech Talk Radio, back with more in a moment. We've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
You reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one weird technology radio show.
Welcome back to
some of the panel.
I'm glad some of the panel have just walked back in. I was very, very scary there for a moment. What's going on here? Hang on a sec. I've got to push that fader up. Say that again, Adam.
The coffee needs another minute.
Okay, good. Yeah, he's brought the plunger in this evening.
And the scones, thank you to the good lady of the house.
Well, listen. Oh, she's excelled herself again. I've just tweeted a picture of all the good stuff we've got on the in the studio here for Nibblies tonight. And thank you, everybody who's contributed to our waistline this evening. So, all good. Hey, some other interesting news too, just whilst everyone's getting coffee and stuff here out the back. It's a bit of a social evening tonight. Telstra is going to quadruple the capacity on the Sydney-Melbourne fibre.
Oh.
Is this good? Is this
the
thing we can
now... as upgrading their fibre connections as well?
I'm not sure. As predicted by IT Wire, which is one of the trade journals around the traps, Telstra has announced plans to upgrade its capacity, quadrupling it from 10 gigabits per second to 40 gigabits per second. I thought that'd be that's pretty lame in this day and age.
Does it apply to everybody, though?
I don't know. Probably. It's like all good things, whichever company you're using to provide that bandwidth.
Telstra, is it just for cable customers, or will wireless customers get it as well, like mobile broadband?
Well, they're talking about Melbourne to Sydney, so anything that's in that loop, I suspect, will get the ability to get to Sydney it won't be competing with as much traffic. A bit more space in the tube.
It'd be nice if they put them down a different tube.
Well, it's yes.
So
like
if you put a backhoe through one of them,
Like a bit like Basslink.
I was about to say that the cynics would make a comment to the effect that it was to take attention away from the Basslink announcement. A day or so before, where for the first time we've actually got independent infrastructure competition to Telstra. Internode, I think, is going to be running communications over it. And another ISP, Aurora, as well.
That's right.
So they've both now begun using the cable to carry customer traffic for the first time. It's
great,
very exciting.
Tassie's come forward in leaps and bounds. They're probably, and I think half of the NBN stuff's going to start rolling out down there too.
Well, this is going to help.
National Broadband Network, for those not familiar with that acronym.
And this is just a tiny little bit of fibre that's in the middle of the electrical distribution cable. The Basslink is actually a power distribution cable. It runs between, is it Loy Yang here? And...
I'm not sure.
Somewhere on the north coast of Tassie.
There'd be an engineer going, rubbing his hands together, going, aren't you glad I put that in when we ran that cable underneath Bass Strait?
That's it, exactly.
So that would have been really, really good. Ah, dear. All right. Microsoft, as we alluded to earlier on in the program, are set to release Windows 7 this month, being July. The long-awaited operating system, the successor to Vista, the cut-down version of Vista, however you'd like to look at it, I guess, has been sent off to RTM, ready to manufacture, and it'll end up being popped into the sort of the distribution for the partners, those sort of people who develop on it in the not too distant. So hopefully we'll see a copy of that because we're a partner. Hopefully we'll see that in July. Load up Windows 7.
The final release version.
The final release version. Yeah, well, the rumour has it that by October 23rd, there might actually be a final release version.
Super gold mark.
So what we might end up seeing on our desktops will be not potentially what the partners sort of see, but it'll be very close. It'll be very close. So
looking forward to it. It should be really good.
Are you going to upgrade anything on your devices?
Yeah, I'm not going to upgrade anything. I'm going to reinstall, start again. Yeah. And I'm going to take the opportunity to get a new PC, because the PC I'm using at the moment is a few years old.
I got a new PC during the week.
Put out to pasture. Yes, you did. You got the mother of all PCs. Tell us about your new toy.
This is the one that occupies the room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
My new PC. It's got 8 cores, did I tell you?
So that means 8 processors, whereas a normal PC just has one processor.
When you bring up the task manager, you can see 8 little slotty things up there popping up on there.
That is crazy. So this isn't obviously a personal computer, Andrew.
No, it's a work computer. It's the top of the line HP at the moment, which be the workstation, the 8600 thingy-me-bob. No, the web's still just as bad. But I use it, obviously, for my work stuff and video editing and things like that, as with obviously producing television programs in high definition these days. You need a little bit of extra grunt behind the video processing.
So how many refrigerators has it got with it?
It's got 2 very big chimneys in it, which is good. And credit to Hewlett-Packard, where they've actually gone and, built a device which is very quiet. Oh. You don't get all the fan noise and stuff that you get.
So you can actually live with it.
Yeah, you can actually.
For a change.
You have to use it inside a freezer room.
Really good. Adam's off microphone walking around.
Come on, coffee boy.
Yeah, exactly.
The office.
Sorry, yes, you need to talk into a microphone. It's radio. We're not in the living room.
Don't make fun of me. Is that the one I saw today?
It is the one you saw today. Just
a
little
baby.
Little black box sitting in the corner, which goes like the clappers. And I showed your husband and he said, ooh, that's impressive.
Yeah, it is impressive. But I mean, for it to be that little tiny box sitting in a corner doing
it
that, it's
just
amazing.
It's amazing what they do with these technology sort of things these days. So yeah, computing's really come of age. And especially for high definition, because everyone's going high definition in the production environment, and it's relatively... how should you say? Because we use optical discs now. We use this thing called XDCAM. And the reason why I was alluding to it, because we're talking about 64-bit operating systems before, which is what Windows is going to be doing and all that sort of stuff. Thanks to Sony, we can't go 64-bit just yet, because some of their machines don't have drivers running in 64-bit mode.
Yeah.
So we're all sort of sitting there going, I'd love to go to Windows 7, but I have to stay on this 32-bit XP operating system.
So there's no backward compatibility at all.
Don't know. But everything's certified and turnkey. And you know those video applications that are so-called highly strung? If you change one little thing, it just doesn't work. Well, that's sort of the sort of parameters that we're working with here. So 32 bits and Sony is all we get. We don't go to 64-bit. But the good thing about it is you get these great little things we call XD cams these days. They're an optical drive, and they store 23 gigabytes of data on them, which is fantastic. It's a bit like Blu-ray, but it's not Blu-ray. It's a Sony proprietary sort of system, which
of course is
what we shoot in the field these days with high definition. It's really good. Works well at 50 megabit MPEG streams.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes on one disc, which is not too bad when you think about those sort of things. So anyway, that's Windows 7. It's nearly here. October the 23rd is the release date here in Australia and globally for that matter. And hopefully...
What operating system are you running on your new device?
XP.
Chrome. Windows XP?
Chrome, yeah, right. It's a browser, isn't it? Windows XP. Currently the latest and greatest 32-bit operating system I think there is.
So not a server? It's actually a workstation?
It's a workstation. It's a HP workstation.
An 8-core workstation.
Yeah, it's
fantastic.
Good. It's good. It's good. And it doesn't generate that much heat either. It's quite good. Anyway, that's toys. That's my gadget of the year. But hey, that's not the show's gadget of the year. Let's talk about Facebook and Twitter and things like that. Apparently, Microsoft are going to take the Xbox 360 and put Facebook and Twitter on it.
Good on them.
Yeah.
Is that going to be great? So you can sit there and play your game and then tweet someone, hey, look at my score. Is that what that's supposed to do?
All three people who bought an Xbox 360 will be able to message each other.
Yeah, no.
I think it is
That's
good.
It's bitter and twisted, isn't it?
The obvious thing that people will do, games manufacturers will integrate support into the as part of the games. Yeah. So if you've got a score, you'll be able to, for example, you know, you'll be able to go into a settings menu and you'll be able to say, you know, when I finish the game, when the game comes to a grinding halt, when the game comes to a grinding halt, it post my score on Twitter or put a new post on my wall on my Facebook page or whatever. So that's where it would come into its own. I reckon it's very useful.
Lydia, you've got the most Twitter followers in the room.
In the world.
In the room.
In the world. Yeah.
What are you up to? You must be up to nearly 2,000 Twitter followers.
I have no idea. I haven't tweeted for ages, actually.
I know. You got the wrath of Dr. Ron last night saying, why haven't you tweeted because of your arrival here
in Australia?
I thought
you've been here for a week and I haven't had any tweets from you. What's going on?
No, I haven't. I've not been well. I said, I've not been well, but also I've been very busy. And but I've been watching Twitter for a little while. I'm not quite sure what it's doing, so I'm sitting back and watching at the moment, much like I did with Facebook, and I can't quite work Facebook out. Isn't that
Dr.
dying?
Ron has.
Everyone keeps saying it's growing, but the only thing I see is these really old people
Facebook. Yeah, there was an article in the local paper here just saying how that the grey-haired people are into Facebook. Mm. It's becoming a really senior type. Not that there's anything wrong with that, don't get me wrong, but that's where it's sort of that's where its appeal is at the moment.
See, what? I find Twitter really useful for looking for news and search real time search.
Where were you when Jacko carked it? Were you online at the time in California, or were you here?
No, I was in California, and I don't know where I heard. It likely would have been
because I was just wondering if you were in California, what happened to your internet at the time? Because there were reports that everything ground to a rapid halt.
Was going on about, oh my God, you know, the death of Michael Jackson, you know, is going to bring down Google.
Let me look
about
didn't it take out Twitter for a little while?
Yeah, it did.
It didn't. What happened was Twitter actually decided to remove some of its functionality to make sure. Twitter's really come.
Then it took out a bit of Twitter for a while. It took out some of its functionality.
No, Twitter chose to.
Yeah, they took it down. They did it.
It hasn't seen the farewell forever, for a long time. So what they did was they removed search and they removed a few things. Trending topics, I think they removed. I can't remember exactly.
Can I just say, I've just logged into Twitter now. The trending topic, Michael Jackson's still number 5 on trending topics.
Yeah. So they just basically disabled some stuff and it kept up no problem. Google, the only thing that happened with Google, as far as I remember, was so many people were searching for Michael Jackson that Google in the United States thought it was some sort of scam, and they started blocking people couldn't go.
Yeah, yeah.
We thought it was under attack.
So, was the only thing.
It wasn't a bandwidth concern or a service providing concern.
No.
It was a hoax concern,
it was a denial of service attack.
Yeah. So they just said, well, we think this is what's happening, so we're not going to let you do anything past search. We're going to warn you of this malicious.
Yeah, they had to. I think users had to type a certain code in to get the results of their search
to prove they were a person.
Yeah, so they weren't a bot.
So
or
it was
like
no
that.
Big deal, but it didn't take anything down. Everyone said it would, but and it did, but it didn't.
When Anna Nicole Smith died, it nearly took down Wikipedia. I think it was.
Oh, everything takes then, down.
Well, Wikipedia. Yeah. Michael Jackson was having 600 edits in a minute or something like that, wasn't
it? But then Angus Kidman wrote a story for IT Wire about how the Wikipedia was going down, and then his story pretty much took down IT Wire for half a day.
Yeah.
Because I sat there for an hour trying to file a story.
That's
of Angus.
TMZ, they were the site that broke the story, and everyone was tweeting saying, go have a look at this, and you couldn't look at it because
it was down.
It was going down. But they held up remarkably well when they got it back up and got it going.
You need server insurance. It's like people used to get slash dotted insurance.
Yeah.
Back when people didn't have the server capacity to handle it. It was like the kiss of death to get pointed to by slash dot because just you go down because you couldn't handle it.
Yeah, but that was a badge of honor.
It was a badge of honor. It was a scar of honor that you would wear.
Slash dot
took us
down.
You don't hear
about
that so much because the big sites sort of have that extra capacity to call upon and stuff like that, so they do survive those things a bit better.
Twitter's done really well in that regard, I think.
What is going on with Twitter? I can't count half of my Twitter followers as real Twitters because they're all these one-off people, obviously not real people trying to follow.
Following 15,000.
It's not like a Kyle and Jackie O. I'm not making them up myself. But you get followed by people, and you're like, okay, I'll click on and just see who it is. And more than half the time now, it's someone who's got one post, which is a random word.
Yeah,
I'm getting
spam.
Sick of it. Yeah, and so I can't even brag about how many followers I've got because I
really
know.
Hate that.
Yeah.
But one thing that Twitter's doing that's really cool is they're starting to check accounts. So they're verifying accounts. Have you?
Yeah, we heard about that, and we spoke about it a while back.
I'm really sorry, okay, I missed that show. But, yeah, so that's one decent thing. But
how are they verifying it, do you know? Because I think, I can't remember.
They sent a guy around to your house.
Yeah, is that you? Yes, Senator Conroy. Have a look in this mirror.
Senator Conroy around, yeah. While I'm here, I'll just check for firewalls while I'm here, if you don't mind. So
bashes you over the head with his award.
The annoying thing with Twitter, with me anyway, is I do have a look at, every time I get a message saying you're being followed by such and such, I will go and have a look at who that person is.
I saw you do that tonight. You were sitting there checking your mail on the laptop.
Yeah.
You had to click on a few things. Who's that?
Yeah, because you want to know who it is. And I've got to admit, you know, I find that a lot. It's just bad.
Lately, just the last month even, I'd say, that's really taken off, the number of people who are following you that aren't obviously real people.
Well, yeah. I tweeted the other night, which is fairly rare for me, but I was sitting in the lounge room watching Star Trek with the kids, so I thought, oh, I'll put this in a Twitter, and instantly I got followed by someone who was flogging Star Trek stuff. Almost instantly.
Oh, wow.
Well, people set up automated programs to follow the public timeline, and if they see keywords like Star Trek, they think, well, I'm going to be spamming people about Star Trek merchandise.
They just put a hashtag in there, I'm going to
add you as a friend, and I'm going to bombard you with messages, and it's all completely automated. It doesn't cost them anything to do.
But they're following him. It doesn't necessarily mean he has to follow them back.
No, which of course they're relying on
some credibility for the number of people they're following.
Thing. There was an etiquette thing. Someone follows you, you follow them, but I think that's falling away now.
Oh, it's fallen away a long time ago. I refused to do it.
But they were relying on that for a while, and that was almost the way when you wanted to announce that you'd arrived on Twitter. You'd start following all these people just so they would get an announcement
that
you were there, and so you would know they exist. So when it wasn't fake Steve Corrin, but it was a couple of others that came along after him, they would start following all the IT journalists just so you get a little pop-up and go, oh, someone's now fake whoever. And that was like a good way of letting people know that you were there just by starting to follow them, so they would get a message to say this person exists, basically. Mm. Whether or not you follow them was up to you, but at least they had now got your attention long enough to let you know that they were there.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing that happened to me in the whole week that I've been Twittering a bit more often than usual, so it's unusual for me, Lid and others have probably had this happen, but I don't have a lot of followers, apart from these spam followers that I've got. I posted a tweet about some information I read about some Apple patents, and almost instantly was retweeted by Patent Retweet, or whatever it was. Now, they're not a follower of mine, so they're founded by searching automatically.
There's a few bots out there. There's one for Telstra. I don't know whether it's still there now. There used to be one for Telstra. Whenever you post something about them, it'd be retweeted.
Mm. Oh, that'd be fun. I can imagine why they took it down.
I don't know. I haven't looked there for a while, but it used to. You could tweet something and you'd see it retweeted just in
almost
moments.
Instantly.
So Dr. Ron's taking photographs in the studio at the moment. But speaking of Twitter, like, I've got my little handheld mobile phone here, and I've got a little Twitter client on there, and I love it because it means it keeps you in touch if the things when you're out and about in the street, or you know, just driving around, and you're not normal, or you wouldn't normally be in a situation to watch Twitter or any of those sort of things and keep up to date with what's going on.
I'd hate to burst your bubble, Andrew, but it's not working.
What's not working?
Your Twitter client there, because have a look at your Twitter page.
Okay, I will. Good for radio.
No, he's not in a...
Talk amongst yourselves while I have a look at my radio page.
He's not in the mobile coverage area at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, one of the interesting things I found with
someone's
my iPhone...
Someone's pointing an iPhone at me.
Yes. But for those of you who have been following my exploits with my iPhone, I haven't had a data pack for a very long time. And whilst I've been on holidays recently, I got a data pack added to my SIM so I could actually use some of the network features like Twitter and Skype and various other things. Even got my email working on my iPhone, which I didn't think I'd ever actually do because I couldn't see the value in it normally.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm not all that sure that I want to stop the data pack. Now that I've gone back to...
Which telco is this with?
This is with Optus.
Okay. It's a bit hard. It's a bit like having a microwave in the kitchen, isn't it? Once you've got these gadgets, you become reliant upon them. And then
so in my case, it's $15 a month extra that I hadn't paid before last month.
But do you get the company that you work for to pay for it?
No, that's my private number.
Do you have to pay them, or they...
This is my private number.
Salary sacrifice.
How much data do you get for that $15?
$500.
See, $10 on Telstra will get you 150 meg.
Yeah.
And then the next one up is $29.
Because you're 300
that
meg.
Might be 300 meg.
Yeah, that's what I've got. Yeah.
So you're still getting better value than you would on Telstra.
Oh, look, it's a good deal. And you know, I bought the phone outright, so I'm ahead in terms of dollars and savings and all that sort of stuff. But Now that I've got the data, I'm not sure that I want to give it back.
You've got to be careful with 3 and roaming, when, especially if because if you upgrade on these handset devices on 3 and you buy an X series, the roaming portion disappears off your bill. So all of a sudden you start getting extra charges on it. And it is possible to be in the middle of any major capital city in Australia and roam.
But can't you disable it? Because I've heard people say that. Can't you disable it?
The iPhone lets you disable roaming.
It depends.
It depends. Three's the problem, though.
It depends on the handset, and it depends what application you're running at the time, because it will. Most applications will actually ask you which portal you want to use, whether you want to use wireless, whether you want to use network, whether you want to use whatever. And chances are, some of the ones where you say just connect through the home network, sometimes it just connects, because I've got my mail set to that, but yet I still get roaming charges for my mail, despite the fact that I've got...
I would not use a phone on 3 if I couldn't disable roaming. I've heard too many people say the same thing.
Yeah, so it's one of those little buyer beware sort of things, especially with mobile broadband. Whereas, they used to have a roaming allocation, but it's disappeared on the X
series. I thought you got stuff. Like 5 meg or something thrown in just
for
emergency.
You do if you don't have a roaming package, if you're like an ad libber.
Yeah.
You know, you randomly want to just use a bit of, because you don't have a pack or something like that. But as soon as you put a pack on, that's it. The roaming disappears and you get slugged for it. So you can tell your bill comes in at something, you know, X dollars, 63 cents, and you go, where'd that come from? And because you can tell you've been slugged for a couple of kilobytes here and a couple of kilobytes there. And if you do a bit of travelling, like you go on holidays or you drive down the Great Ocean Road or you drive up anywhere up through, you know, out of a sort of main city centre where 3 is, you'll get done roaming each and every time.
Absolutely.
So when your laptop decided to upgrade its Photoshop version, that wasn't on 3, was it?
No. That's why I have a Telstra card, because I don't like the roaming. I don't want any surprises. But when you do roam, and it wasn't a Windows update. It was an Adobe update that was doing it in the background. So watch out for those.
I've always been annoyed by this stuff because the computer is not smart enough. Well, it could be, but no one creates applications that are smart enough to go, hang on, I'm on a wireless network and now don't allow that. And that's one of the reasons why I started using the ad blocker on Firefox, was because I was using my Telstra phone as my tethering and paying ridiculous amounts of data. And this was with my ThinkPad. And I wasn't going to pay to look at people's ads. I didn't want to pay for that bandwidth. I don't mind now so much because I've got more bandwidth, but I would still like, even if it's just somewhere you can build into the firewall, you know, your different profiles like home and away and stuff like that. I want a profile that says, hey, you're on mobile. I will block internet access for all applications except the ones that you specify.
Yep.
So Adobe can't wake up in the background and say, hey, we need to pull down a 100 meg connection because the firewall says no.
That would be really good.
I don't know if I've gone out of my way to look for it, but there'd be a market there for it.
Absolutely.
Because it's only got to save you once and it's paid for itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would pay for that. All the Linux hackers out there would know how to do that.
Well, that's the thing is, you could do it manually if you knew what you were doing. But that's I'm surprised that people like, Norton and AVG, or Norton Fire, the Zone Alarm, do AVG do firewalls? You know, the people who do firewalls. But maybe they've got vested interest in making sure that doesn't happen. I don't know.
Yeah, look, I'm with you on that, because if you look at what the smarts like Adobe can write in for their updates for their programs, it waits for the network to be quiet, as in you're not doing any bandwidth. So it sort of thinks, oh, well, downtime, I'll sneak in a quick download.
Hmm.
And that's when the damage gets done, when you're sitting at the kitchen table and you walk away to get your coffee, and, of course, your bandwidth stops because you've stopped browsing or checking your email.
A Windows update, a lot of people have them pulled down automatically.
My Google phone and Lyd's Google phone will have something similar to what Adam's talking about. It's got a data roaming setting which says connect to data services when roaming, yes or no. So if I am roaming, it'll explicitly disable any application that tries to access a data service.
Have you roamed with it? Does it work? Or haven't checked it out yet?
It does work, yeah. I've roamed with this. I've been out of the coverage for my service provider. And, everything stops working. If I've got Latitude running, it just stops working. If I've got my email, for example, it just stops polling. So
we need the desktop equivalent. We need something like that will run on a notebook.
Yeah, you do. Yep.
On Windows or Mac or whatever, that will say, nah, sorry, you're on mobile broadband. You're not allowed to access the internet.
It's easy to do. Yeah, it just makes a lot of sense.
I'm sure technically it's not that hard, but I've never seen it done.
Time for a break. Time for a coffee. Back with more in a moment. Internet Explorer 8 officially came out of beta during the course of the week.
Images depicting a man vomiting outside a London pub were removed from the site.
Give it a try if you haven't.
I got stuck by our own spam filter.
Yeah, it's good like that. It works well.
There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
With many years in experience.
Entertaining.
You're an idiot. It's only three words.
Informative.
These new hard drives are all solid state.
Independent.
They need constant poking.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tricky thing, the English language.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You are back on Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron here, and Andrew is our host. We also have Adam and JD and Mad Lid in the studio. Hooray! Say hello, Lid.
She made it all.
Enjoying the scones.
Sorry, I'll push the fader
up. You went
now.
All the way up to the microphone then, specially for you.
I know, and I forgot.
I'll try again.
What was I trying? Sorry.
No, that worked.
we'll just
prove what we need to prove. We were talking a little bit earlier about the Basslink cable tongue-in-cheek that connects Victoria to Tasmania. We have at least two people listening to us live at the moment in Tasmania.
We have some Tassie listeners listening to us through Basslink. Yes. Oh, I feel refreshed.
And we also have June listening as well. Hello, June, and welcome aboard. It's good to have you listening live from Tasmania.
That's good. I like Tassie. Tassie's a great spot. You've been there for a holiday recently?
Not recently, but it's a great spot for holiday. Pop up in the chat if you'd like to say hello, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
So what else has been happening? Cyber attacks put the spotlight on web vulnerabilities. This has been in the news again this week. I saw Mr. Conroy's been out with his press releases again today.
Yeah,
I didn't read it, though.
And thanks, GD, as well, for all the contributions that he made through the week. Had a lot of news come in about that the denial of service attack, which was launched against the United States, and also, he says,
the whole
frantically
of the United States.
Yeah, scrolling through his notes here, was it South Korea or
the whole of the United States? What's going on there?
No, not the whole of the United States. A denial of service
was
attack was
Korean
aimed at
South Korean.
27 American and South Korean government agencies and commercial websites. They were absolutely hammered. The actual number of infected computers is estimated to be somewhere between 50,000. And 65,000 computers.
It's all those Commonwealth Bank spam ads, isn't it?
Well, potentially.
It is. I actually spoke to someone at the Commonwealth Bank in a bit of a know about the technology during the course of the week, and this is in relation to these cyber attacks. He was getting, put it this way, he was on the floor talking on the phone, so when you ring up, that's the type of person you would be speaking to. He said he would be getting three customers daily that were being a victim of these Commonwealth Bank spam things that were out there.
So that's not people that are receiving the messages, they're actual victims
that have mistakenly
clicked on a link in an email.
Please help me, I've clicked. Three of those calls a day he was getting on average at the height of those nasty emails that were coming out.
What does
the bank do? The bank does its best to reclaim any losses that the customer may have, you know, unwittingly done.
And you'd expect if your personal information had been jeopardised, you'd be changing account numbers, you'd be changing passwords, changing login details straight away.
Anyway, the point is that if he was, he said he's one of a few thousand people on the floor taking, you know, queries from certain customers. And if he was getting three, then everybody else would have been getting three.
A day then. Yeah.
And that just gives you an understanding about how big these scammers, spammers, whatever you want to call them, actually are. And I remember when that last little batch came out, I received one and I thought, this is interesting. You look, just because out of curiosity, didn't click any links, but went and had a look at the domains that they were sending these things from. And they were sending them from .com.au domain, so that someone had actually registered them. But
they're being hosted outside of Australia, are they, generally?
Yeah, and they just pop up for one day and disappear the next.
Yeah.
Just come and go as they please type sort of thing. So I guess, yeah, that's the moral of the lesson, moral of the story is just don't click on those links, for goodness sakes, whatever you do.
It's not even that. It's just the fact that people don't know enough. Like, we won't click on them, we won't go there, we might go check them out. But, I mean, we're not going to do very much there. We're not going to leave our account details. But, I mean, other people, the majority of users, they're just going to go, oh, cool, so I've got to go change my account details, and they'll just see the page and...
I sort of feel for some of the older generation who have brazenly taken the, this internet thingy can't be too bad, and they jump online and they get stung like this.
They really do.
One of the best ones I've seen recently was for the ATO.
What happened? Do tell.
Well, it was an email that basically said... the APO have realised that we owe you $519.34.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And please click on this form, open the form and fill it out. And then you don't have to do it electronically, because once you fill out the form, you can print it and post it to us. So it's safe.
That's a bit of a scam, isn't it?
So you click the link and you open the PDF, but you've actually opened it on a server somewhere. But you're looking at it on your computer. So you fill out the PDF, and what you're actually doing is filling out an electronic form.
You click on the print now button, and it's actually a submit button.
You click on the print now, and it's actually a submit button. Mm. And you've just submitted them all your banking details to the ATO.
Yeah.
So they could give you... And it wasn't... It was really nicely done. It was just like that round number, not too... Like, it's, well, not you've won $10 million, like most people going...
Yeah.
$519.34 from the ATO. And you're like... Yeah, because I got back a few hundred bucks last year. That could be about right. I reckon they would do really well with that. That would get a lot of people.
Absolutely.
They did the same thing in the United States. In the United States recently, not the Australian Tax Office, but it was the same system. It was your tax. You've got. It was a nominal amount, so you would think it was true.
Yeah.
And people were doing it. They just don't know any better.
Lots of nominal amounts can make someone very rich very quickly. I must admit, especially if you use your credit card and you buy overseas or you buy on eBay or something like that, and there's a credit card transaction for maybe under $20. The banks, I know the bank in this country will ring you straight away. Did you make that transaction?
I've had banks ring me to do that.
I made a transaction on my credit card of a very a large amount during the course of the week and didn't get boo out of the credit card company. But you put a transaction through into sort of like England or the United States from Australia for a small amount, and they'll be on the phone quick as a shot.
We got that. We got our I got my card closed down because, well, they basically blocked it thinking, you know, someone had stolen my card when in fact it was me using it. So, you know, I think Australian banks are very onto it, very careful.
They didn't used to be. 10 years
really?
Ago, Alice and I were in Europe and we had one of our cards skimmed and someone started using it in Rome. But thankfully, after we got home, so it was easy to prove it wasn't us. And in one day, they bought $10,000 worth of electronics and perfume and all kinds of stuff before it was blocked. And the bank didn't do anything. The first thing I knew is when I went to get some money and they said, dude, you got no money. Actually, you owe us 10 grand. And this was with a credit union, so it wasn't a really big bank. But thankfully, this is when I worked at The Age, and the credit union was in the building, and I went and saw them, and it's like, dude, while you think I was doing that yesterday, here's the same thing on my credit card statement saying I was buying groceries at Safeway down the road. I'm not in two places at once. And so what they did is they put a stop on it, and then they let my new money that came in, like my pay, they let me have that. They didn't say any money that came in, no, well, that's paying off the 10 grand. They sort of froze that 10 grand debt until we sorted it out, which was good. But I was lucky that I knew the bank manager because he was on the same floor and me in the same building. Mm. If you were dealing with a big faceless bank, you might not have as much luck. But this day, a big faceless bank may not have let it get to that point.
Mm.
It's Microsoft is certainly not immune to all this sort of stuff either. There's a domain name going around, itsecure.microsoft.com. which people might be actually getting emails from as a domain name. And
what is it?
itsecure.microsoft.com. Apparently it sounds authentic, and by all off the cuff, it sort of is authentic. But basically it's a domain that is not safe to visit. PC Tools Threat Fire Research Team has warned that the active malware, amongst other things on that site, is aimed at getting you to put in your details to get anti-malware packages, which obviously downloads Trojans and does all the wrong things. And it just goes to show that, you know, no domain is safe. Just because it looks good doesn't mean it is good.
A lot of people don't realise that with the current email system that we use in the world, you can actually put any address as your from address. There is no validation. There is no security checking with the mail protocol, which is called SMTP, Simple Mail Transfer Protocol. I can send Lid a message and I can say from good looking bloke at drron_imhorny.com or something.
Would you read that?
Was that you? It was me. But you can just invent anything you like and you can send anything you like. And that's why I know I harp on and on and on about it, but I think the email system that we have today, SMTP, is something that was effective 30 or 40 years ago. It's just going to die a natural death. 99% or whatever it is, 95% of the world's email traffic at the moment is spam. The problem with not having any sort of inbuilt validation or any security that's mandated inbuilt in the protocol just means it's open to abuse, but it's not going to get better.
Some email providers are starting to do their own checks on that kind of thing. Like Yahoo has something called domain keys or something like that. So if you've sent it from crazyhornydrron.com, it actually well, if you put that as your email address, but it's actually come from iamaspammer.com, it says, well, this email address doesn't match the domain name that it came from, therefore we think it's a fake email address, therefore we're going to classify it as spam.
And there are anti-spam programs like Spam Assassin that do that, and they give each message a rating based on a large number of tests, and they do what's called a reverse lookup on the
TCP IP address from the machine it's been sent from, and they say if that domain name is not registered to that address, then yeah, we'll certainly will increment the possibility that this is a spam message.
Point. You give and it an if extra it gets point. More than however many, and you can set the threshold.
That's exactly
if, any piece of email gets more than 5 points or 10 points or 20 points, then just call it spam.
That's it. And there's someone in the chat there. I think it's Warlocks just saying, yeah, he's sent an email for, and he's called himself bill.gates@microsoft.com. Well, anyone can do that. That's just.
Can you send me one from Bill Gates at Microsoft? I just want to have it in my inbox.
I will send it to you before the end of the program. Yes,
you'll probably get a lot of listeners.
Warlock
sending
also
to you.
Has a point that Gmail has some of the best built-in spam filtering I've
seen. It's very good, isn't it?
It's extremely good. I'm with Fastmail as well, and theirs is also very good.
A client, a mail client that has very good inbuilt spam filtering that costs nothing and just works is Mozilla's Thunderbird. If you use Mozilla Thunderbird as an email client and you combine it with collecting your mail from a mail server that uses Spam Assassin, then a lot of your spam will get knocked on the head. But it's Band-Aid stuff. It's a lot of work that everyone has to go to behind the scenes.
It's an industry in itself, really, isn't it?
To filter it out. It's terrible.
Which is clogging up the internet.
It's clogging up the intrawebs, JD. It's driving me nuts.
Lovely thought, Dr. Ron, but who uses it?
Who uses what, email?
Thunderbird.
Who's a Thunderbird?
Well, a few nerds.
There are.
I used to.
17.
Dr. Ron used to use it until something terrible happened and it never worked again. And he moved away.
No, I've got Thunderbird running right now at the moment on my netbook in front of me, but you're right. It does some things very well and there's other things where it falls short. You're right.
See, you've got to look at what's out there in common because that's what the spammers target. And you've got to look at Microsoft Office products like Outlook and Outlook Express, which is default on every PC that you would ever buy.
If you use an Outlook Express, you may as well put a big stamp on your forehead that says, I'm going to get done.
And if you are using those products, be sure to do your updates ever so regularly. If Dr. Graham was here, he'd be saying, well, because Microsoft sent out a tool on their little updates called a malicious tool removal device, which only does the current thing. So if there's something hot to trot out there, then theoretically that's what it does. But you still need to have your antivirus stuff, whether it be, Kaspersky's or whoever's up and running. And, of course, a lot of those antivirus programs these days actually have anti-spam in them too, don't they, Dr. Ron?
They do. So their package has got antivirus, anti-spam, anti-spyware, all that sort of stuff.
Hey, if Senator Conroy can filter internet sites, could he filter spam for us too if we go for the big Australian proxy filtery thingy?
Oh, let's not entrust him with that as well.
Isn't he already reading our email?
Oh,
we could just ask.
ASIO's following you.
Well, yeah. When you're reading my email, can you just pluck the spam out before I get to it? That'd be great.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
I'd really appreciate it.
Well, let's not use email.
Bite your tongue.
Come on now.
He's just spent $44 million on a filter. You reckon he could do that for us? And you're part of a... Yeah, no worries.
The man couldn't filter coffee.
That's harsh.
What's coming out in September? Can someone tell me? There's the report coming out in September?
Apparently the first round of internet filter trials is still about 8 weeks away, which is September. So watch this space.
I thought Optus and that were already doing... them, or is it this?
Oh, they are, but
level?
This is the report of how successful they were. A bit of a scorecard coming out on internet filtering.
That's what I'm...
Because a lot of organisations, such as ISPs, have done their own thing and done their own tests, whether with or without Mr. Conroy's blessing. And I think Exatel is one of those organisations, a fairly independent and, fairly progressive ISP. They do a lot of stuff themselves. A bit like iiNet, they get out there and build their own, because no one else is doing it. They do it like and the same with Interno, very progressive ISPs. And they've been doing their own tests to see what can and can't be done. But the sanctioned one by Mr. Conroy is scheduled to be, or the report out as to how successful it was, is coming out fairly soon, which I think is that 8 weeks that you're speaking of in September, around grand
What's
final time, so we'll get buried under the thing. About
ISPs, about the whole filtering thing.
They hate it.
Look, everyone, and one of our friends of our radio program, Susan McLean, who's 27 years Victoria Police, cyber cop, very much against.
I like her. She comes on here and I listen to her.
She does.
Tune in then.
Very much against. It says, education is the best thing. Keep your kids safe at home. And where are your computers? It must be out in the living room.
Your kids? Well, we've got laptops, they carry them around, and so we know our kids are pretty good. Jonah particularly is very good. He'll actually come to me and say, someone's trying to chat to me, have a look at this, and I'll turn off. So but they've been, around computers since they were little, like two, so they know what to do, but not everyone's that lucky.
What are the schools like in the US in respect to online? Do the kids get online at schools?
They do. Every kid in Jonah's class, well, he's in grade 4, last year he's going to be in grade 5, they all have a Mac, and, you know, because it's so secure and so wonderful and keeps them locked in and they can't get out of the school. And they're showing me stuff on that they get out of the school.
Of course.
You know, he's 9, 10 now, and he's getting out of the school and looking at some god-awful stuff. And so are the other kids, you know, stuff that you guys probably looked at as well. But you can't stop it.
What about cyberbullying? Is there much incidence of that in the States?
I haven't seen it. I haven't had any personal sort of... No, I haven't seen it at all.
Any of the kids in the classes that the kid your kids are in over there had any experience with it?
Not cyberbullying, but, you know, my kids are still too little for the whole Facebook, MySpace, MySpace, YouTube,
I think the best rule that I've heard is that at night the mobile phone sits on the kitchen bench charging.
That's the one I've heard. That's it's the be mobile the phone that's the problem. Yep. At night time under the covers and, you know, having a chat.
My kids are 2 and 5, so it's not a problem yet, but that will be the rule in my house. Whatever your device is at the time
that you know of, Dad.
But the portable quick one.
Whatever portable device you've got, it lives in the kitchen and charges on the bench. It does not go into your room at night. That will be the
right.
Good
idea.
The New South Wales Correctional Services had a great idea in relation to fixing that problem. They have a little device that jams mobile phone frequencies.
Aren't they illegal?
Yes.
Oh, but well, not in a jail.
Not in a jail, apparently.
I thought you meant to put in your kid's bedroom and just hide it under the bed.
I'm sure there's got to be a low-power version that you can...
Yeah, exactly right. A 2-metre radius.
We'll start to
be buying Wi-Fi routers that have got them optioned in, so, yes, parents can turn on the jammer.
Don't you remember when you were a kid and you used to do nasty, diabolical things with technology? I remember used to build those 9-volt battery TV jammers that oscillate wide signal strength and used to go around to your friend at school who you hated.
It's a nerd.
And you'd really, really bad. You got the wrong T-shirt.
And you'd put a bit of silicon glue around it and lob it up into the tree or onto the guttering in the house, and they couldn't watch television for weeks.
Oh, man, I wish I'd have known you.
Why would you do that?
They sound fun, don't they?
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Well, have a look at some of the fantastic... You know, you look at Steve Wozniak. He was exactly the same. With his blue box, exactly. And, you know, he used to sit at Stanford or wherever it was, and he'd sit up the back there. Berkeley, yeah, and he'd sit up the back with his blue box and watch all these people do amazing things like yoga positions to try and get the TV antenna to
and
work.
30 better. Years down the track, we're buying TV big on remotes for our key ring, aren't we?
Oh, yes. I've still got mine in my car. It's very handy when you go past local TAB.
That's funny. That's a funny little key ring device. You press the button and it's infrared. It just
knows the off signal through. For every television set known to mankind.
Yeah,
the infrared off signal for every television that's ever been manufactured. So you just press the button and point it, and within 5 seconds or 10 seconds, a TV will turn off.
Oh, they sell that as a gag, don't they, for kids?
Oh, it's real funny. If you go to Crown Casino.
Try it at the TAB.
Kids have one.
You can turn every horse monitor around.
Casino, into the sports bar.
Yeah, that'd be good. I must admit, I was doing ABC Radio and I did it at ABC Master Control here in Melbourne. I managed to turn on.
Oh, they will not let you back.
They love me in there. But they had a little off-air receiver up the top there. You could see through the glass when I was talking on the radio. Sorry. But, you know, they work really well. But that's some of the great gadgets we had when growing up. Anyway, we've digressed. But so that's, in answer to your question, Liv, that's what's happening in about 8 weeks' time. Because we're going to find out whether... I think Stephen Conroy's going to hopefully hope for the grand final, you know, an upset win, and that Friday before the granny, he'll release it. We're not doing the field ring. What did you say? Doesn't matter.
He's going to do that, isn't he? He's going to back off. He's going to have to.
Jeff Kennett used to call his elections for the first weekend in October. And so for the last 5 or 6 weeks of the election campaign, everyone would talk football. Mm. And then he only had to deal with people for a week. He did it several times, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's like the 5 o'clock press release on a Friday afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love it. No, it's more like 5:30 these days.
5:30.
Yeah. Oh, gotta love when they do that.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to take a break, come back with the Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week for the wrap, and back with more in just a moment. Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No. Do you block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffany techie propeller head, Vicky.
Independent.
The SMS is not a on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now, if you get Inga from Sweden showing up.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
A software gadget, we spoke about it earlier in the program, but tethering on the HTC Dream and also the HTC Magic. This is important. The Dream hasn't been...
This is a great gadget.
Yeah, it hasn't been widely available here, but the Magic has now been launched and that's going to be making a big impact on our mobile phone market fairly soon here. What you do is you download an application called Tetherbot, and it's a what's called a proxy server. It runs on the Android platform. You download and install an equivalent application called ADB, or you can download and install the Android Software Development Kit onto your laptop or onto your netbook or your computer. The two applications talk to each other and they funnel traffic, web traffic, from your laptop through the USB cable and out through the Google phone.
Fantastic
How
gadget.
How good's that?
Excellent.
So that's our software gadget of the week. It's
it doesn't cost anything, does it?
Doesn't cost a brass razoo.
Best kind of gadget.
Yeah, all free of charge. Just download them.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Talking about social networking a little bit earlier, this is a very interesting community which has just emerged in recent times. Audioboo.fm.
What is that?
What is Audioboo? It's an audio blogging community. It's similar in concept to Twitter, and it's for users of Apple's iPhone predominantly who can install an application from
they
the
let, they
App
let them
Store.
Put that one on, do they?
What this does is it lets you record a short message, which instead of it being a tweet, it's called a boo. And oh, you God. Can attach an image, you can give it a title, you can comment there, you can tag it, and you can also automatically add your GPS Latin long to the boo, and you can upload it to the Audio Boo website.
Another thing
then,
that's bastardized the English language again, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
You've been booed lately?
What you can then do is look at the...
That's coming from you.
Yeah, you can look at the public timeline, and you can view everybody's Audio Boos, but you don't need an account in order to post. You can post anonymously, and if you don't
have
that
could be bad. Yeah, that'd be bad.
If you don't have an iPhone, you can dial in, you can make a phone call into their gateway, and you can post either through your account or anonymously over the telephone.
So you can just record anonymous conversations
you
on
can.
Public transport and
you
boo them.
You can. But the whole concept is, though, that you're, say, look, I would say make an audio boo now saying, Dr. Ron here, I'm about to go live in 5 minutes on Tech Talk Radio, hope you can join us, and just hit record
and
or upload.
Fact, like 12-second TV. On Twitter, Robert Llewellyn from... the Red Dwarf fame does audio boo whenever he's putting a podcast on. So
there you go. But I'm not sure if it's the thing that's going to do it for me, but other people think it's fantastic. Have a look at the website of the week, audioboo.fm.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
If you want a snapshot of the way that corporate culture and legalese can make even the simplest things mind-bogglingly complicated, just head over to Walmart's Twitter page and click on the Terms of Use link. There's a long slab of text, nearly 3,700 words, which says things like, on Twitter we encourage dialogue with customers and prior products and brands and initiatives, and there's weasel words like we go forward and collaborate with stakeholders and we look
weasel
at,
words
yeah many of our 2.2 million associates around the world now use Twitter, and it's a whole it's like a terms of use page explaining to people how they want them to interpret their tweets on Twitter. But how completely pointless. But well done, Walmart. I'm sure you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone has got paid a lot more than I get paid to actually They're being transparent. Yeah. There's transparency. They're collaborating with key stakeholders.
They really are.
They're going forward.
They're being so transparent that you can't actually see through it.
Someone's being paid a lot of money to be transparent.
Yes.
They need to show their 27 pages for how to use Twitter. I think that's gorgeous,
that's
don't you?
That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
And that's the show for this week. With it's been a fun show. We've had a full contingency in tonight. Obviously, Graham hasn't been here, but with Lydia, that's it, Lyd. That's it. We'll see you in another 4 years. Is that the way it works?
No, I was thinking you guys should come over in 4 years' time and do it there.
Okay.
Don't you think?
We could do that. We'll truck over to the, who knows what you might hear or see of us by then, but you never know your luck.
A live from Silicon Valley edition.
Yeah, we could actually go camp out at Google, couldn't we?
Oh, that'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
Hey, thanks for being part of Tech Talk Radio for the past 4 years too.
And not so much this year, I'm really sorry.
Well, Dr. Ron got into you about that earlier, so far be it from me to do it.
She
got into me about it. I've got to ring her more often.
Absolutely. And next week, are we going to have a view from the IMAX? So see, looking
we might have.
We might have, yeah. Harry Potter comes out this week, everybody, so the Tech Talk team will be heading off to check out the latest 3D installment.
Expecto Patronum. Well, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm quite looking forward to it because there's it ties in seven of the... anyway, Voldemort. Anyway,
it's the big one.
All good, all good. Anyway, that's it. We'll see you all next week, same time on the radio station. It's been fun. And yes, until then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.